Welcome. It's the top of the hour, and I'm here. This is Laura Belland with Capital Week, where we discuss what's going on in state government and the Iowa legislature. So it was a very busy week in all three branches of government, and I think I'll start with the Iowa legislature, which should have finished their work last week. The per diems that the legislators received ran out on Friday, April 30th, but they are nowhere near finishing their work for the year. So they are the main outstanding issues that they have to deal with are the budget. That's the one thing that they can't leave town without passing. They also are the Iowa House and Senate have passed competing versions of tax cuts and changes to the tax code. There are a number of other big bills that they're working on where they just haven't gotten final agreement on the language. One of them is a policing reform measure. Another one relates to COVID-19 vaccine passports, which is a little strange because nobody's proposed vaccine passports. But in any case, both the Iowa House and Senate are working on legislation to address that issue. And then there may be some other curveballs that we get late in the game. Last Thursday, Governor Kim Reynolds announced on a Fox News town hall that she is interested in signing some legislation related to banning transgender participation in youth sports. It's not clear what's going to happen on that, but that seems to be something that the House and Senate Republicans are working on. Last week, the Democratic leaders of the House and Senate, they were talking about how they really feel that the legislature is addressing problems that aren't really problems, that they don't really see the point of a vaccine passport bill since nobody is proposing anything like that. They would like to see, the Democrats in both chambers would like to see more action on a COVID-19 relief for small businesses and Iowans who are out of work, but it doesn't seem like any of that is in the works.
Laura, can you hear me now?
Oh, yes, thank you. Dennis, had to start without Dennis Hart. My partner in crime here, but I'll let Dennis take it from here. Dennis, I was just explaining how the legislature is in overtime now, and I went through some of the things that they still haven't agreed on that they expect to address before they leave town for the year, or at least leave town until they come back and do redistricting in the fall.
I think this was a remarkable start to this program. I wish we could redo it just at the moment we went on the air, and everybody could hear me, including you, until we went on the air. And now here I am, and even I can hear myself. So this is Cap. Did you introduce the broadcast, Laura?
Yes,
this
I
is
did.
Capital Week. And I said that I'm happy to be joined by the very well-known Laura Bellin, extremely well-known, and I'm glad to know you, Laura. Thanks for joining us here, or thank me for joining you. All right, let's talk about what they still have to do this coming week. I know you got into a lot of it. What do they still have to do with the legislature?
Yes, well, I think the budget will be the biggest thing, and whether the House and Senate can agree on some budget targets. I expect some more budget bills to be passed later in the week. They've passed only small pieces of the budget. It looks like they're going to agree to increase the funding for the judicial branch in a fairly significant way. But the Health and Human Services budget and the education and the justice system's budget, they still seem to have a lot of work on that. One thing that I didn't mention that came up again last week is proposed cuts to unemployment. The Iowa Senate Republicans still want to pass some kind of bill on that. It got through committee. So far, as far as I can tell, they don't have the votes in the House for that, but they've brought back that bill in a slightly different version. So it would make people wait one extra week to start collecting unemployment, and it would have a few other cuts, but it didn't contain all of the same cuts that were in earlier versions of that unemployment legislation that we talked about a month or two ago.
Now, the two houses still have not reached an agreement on the abortion bill at this point.
Yes, well, I'm not sure what's happening with that. One thing about the abortion constitutional amendment is it doesn't really matter whether they pass it this year or next year, because it has to be passed by two separately elected legislatures. So as long as they pass it sometime before the 2022 election, then they have to come back and pass an identical version in either 2023 or 2024 to get it on the ballot in 2024. We had had so far, the Iowa Senate is insisting on the language that they passed last year. The House had passed a slightly different language. I don't really understand the disagreement, because it functionally it's exactly the same. both versions of the amendment would say that the Iowa Constitution doesn't protect any right to abortion or funding of abortion. But we'll see how far the Senate Republicans want to take the brinksmanship on this. And it's possible that the House Republicans may just not pass that this year and come back to it next year.
Now, the House has passed a bill banning vaccine passports. The Senate is poised to do the same this week, aren't they?
Yes. I mean, this is something, like I was saying before you came back and joined us, no one is proposing vaccine passports. I mean, the Biden administration isn't proposing it. A state government isn't proposing it. The Democrats aren't asking for it. And so there's a question about why this legislation is even happening. And it seems to be more about sending a message than anything else. And it also seems to be somewhat undermining the message of how important it is for people to get vaccinated. But the strange thing is that the people who were pushing the most for this bill banning vaccine passports are not happy with the current version of it because it has an exemption for hospitals and nursing homes. So healthcare facilities as defined under state law, which mostly is hospitals and clinics and nursing homes. So they're very unhappy because those types of establishments would still be able to require people to be vaccinated to, let's say, visit their loved ones there.
But so with far, all,
I didn't see any sign that the Republican leadership was interested in amending those bills.
With all the legislature still has to do, what do you think? Will they finish this week or is this going to bleed over into next week?
I wouldn't be surprised if it bleeds over into next week, although they have last year they surprised me and they do tend to they sometimes work all night or work through the night on Friday night or Saturday night in order to try to finish over a weekend. So it's possible that they could finish this weekend. I think that with all the outstanding issues, I wouldn't be surprised if they have to come back and finish some of it next week.
A lot to do with the legislature, and the governor had a lot to do last week. She made news in a variety of areas. Let's go over them step by step. She signed the bill that lets landlords turn away renters who receive federal assistance through the Federal Housing Choice Voucher Program, Section 8. This is a big deal, and it's going to affect a lot of people.
Yes, and this was a bill, I had written about this earlier in the week, it was unusual because the legislature passed this, the House passed the final version on March 15th, and the Senate passed it on March 17th. So as of last Wednesday, we were 6 weeks beyond final passage of the bill, and it still hadn't been forwarded to the governor's desk. And so I was talking to a lot of people. I couldn't find anyone who's followed the legislature who could remember a bill being held up for that long once it's been through both chambers. Normally, they send it to the governor within a week or two, sometimes 3 weeks, but 6 weeks was really unheard of. So it seemed like something was going on, some sort of analysis of whether there were problems with the bill. And it seemed like perhaps the governor was considering not signing it. But then on Friday morning, an update to the website showed that it had been sent to the governor's office. And I thought, well, it's going to be signed in a late Friday afternoon a batch. And sure enough, a press release came out late Friday afternoon with 38 bill numbers that the governor signed. And there was no comment on this bill or any bill. There was no summary of any bill, but this of the ones that she signed last week, this will be the most significant. And it's possible that the Federal Housing and Urban Development Agency may try to withhold some of our state funding. We'll have to see where that goes. But the HUD Secretary, Marcia Fudge, indicated last month that she's going to be taking a very close look at this Iowa law if it was signed. And in fact, it has now been signed.
She also signed a bill last week that's going to provide hundreds of millions of dollars for broadband expansion around the state. Now, right now, Iowa has the second lowest internet speeds of any state in the nation. So this one could have an impact.
Yes. I mean, the legislators in both parties are very excited about this bill. They also, in a separate bill, they passed $100 million in funding for this year. The governor had asked for $150 million. But they're counting on some money from the federal government, assuming Congress approves an infrastructure package that would include some broadband. So they think that they'll come very close to hitting that $150 million target. Now, one of the issues with the way they structured these broadband grants is the speeds, the idea is to have high-speed internet everywhere. But if somebody is going into an area that doesn't currently have high-speed internet, they will be allowed to have install lower speed, lower upload and download speeds. And so there's a question about whether this is really going to bring broadband to all of those underserved rural areas or whether there will still be some people left out. I should say also that the Democrats in the Senate tried to offer an amendment that would have contained a clawback provision so that if the grant, the private company that gets one of these grants, if they end up not living up to what they promised in terms of the speed of the internet, would have allowed the state to take the money back. But that did not get passed. So we're going to hope that the money that they give out in these broadband grants actually leads to high-speed internet for most Iowans, but right now we're going to have to see. About 2/3 of the counties of Iowa are considered broadband deserts right now, so there's really a lot to do.
Governor went on Fox News last week and made what many people are considering a curious announcement. She said she wanted to sign a bill that limited transgender athletes' participation in sports. Now, bills doing that had been introduced in the legislature earlier this year, but they didn't advance. So what is going on with this and why is she doing this on Fox News?
Well, I was really surprised to hear that, but in a way it made some sense. As you mentioned, there were a few bills introduced earlier this year in the House and Senate to limit transgender participation in sports, and they had very few co-sponsors and they didn't go anywhere. They didn't even get out of any committee. And so I thought, well, this is just not an issue that the legislature is interested in taking on. And then I had heard early last week that people were working on some kind of an amendment to attach to some other bill that was related to trans participation in sports. And I thought, why are they bringing that back up? So when the governor said she wants to sign something on that this year, I thought, okay, well, she must have had her staff talking to people in the legislature. But as for what Governor Reynolds thinks she's going to get out of that, I'm not sure. I mean, she mentioned that she has daughters and granddaughters who play sports, and she seems to think it's important. I mean, I'm not aware of any issues, any controversies in Iowa related to any trans boys or trans girls playing on sports teams. I mean, I just don't really know. I think a bill like that would have a lot of unintended consequences because the NCAA has said that they are not going to hold championships in any states that have this kind of law. And I think in 2023, at least there was a hope that Des Moines would land some first or second round games for the NCAA basketball tournament. So I don't really know where that's going to go, but I think there will be a pretty strong lobbying push against that if it does come up and if it is attached to other legislation.
You think this is an effort perhaps to fire up the conservative Republican base?
Well, I mean, it seems that way, but I don't know how much more they could do to fire up the base. I mean, they already have a constitutional amendment on guns that is going to gin up a lot of conservative turnout next year. I mean, they've got, in all likelihood, more restrictions on abortion that they will have passed. I mean, they really, it sounds that way. I mean, in the absence of any live controversy related to transgender sports, I mean, it does seem like something sort of pulled out of the air that might make parts of the base happy, but I'm not really sure. It seems like anyone who would be very excited about a bill like this would already be supporting the governor. So I'm not really sure what she gets out of it.
She also made another announcement that some folks found a bit curious. Word that the state had returned $95 million in federal money that was intended to help with coronavirus testing in Iowa schools. The state turned it back to the federal government, and that led some folks to perhaps question, you mean you couldn't find a way to use that money to stop the spread of the virus or test? What's the background here, Laura?
Well, it's funny because I wasn't watching the Fox News, the town hall with the five Republican governors, and I saw people starting to post on Twitter about how the Kim Reynolds turned down $95 million, and I hadn't heard anything like that, and I actually thought it was a false rumor spreading like wildfire on Twitter. And I asked someone, where are you getting that? I've never heard of that. And they said, she just said it on Fox News. And so then sure enough, somebody posted the clip and I was able to see. And then the state public health agency confirmed that this was money. This was one pot of money. It was $10 billion total allocated to states, and Iowa's share would have been $95 million. And the CDC was offering this and they gave 14 different ways that this could support COVID-19 testing in either public schools or private schools. Everything from routine surveillance testing to supporting local public health departments to establish school screening programs to supporting IT systems to monitor screening to supporting local labs that process and even providing personal protection equipment in schools. So, I mean, it's a really strange thing to turn down a huge pot of money. And just to put it in context, the Test Iowa program, which was the public-private partnership that the state signed on to with a no-bid contract early in the pandemic to set up testing, that was a $26 million contract. And that was for something like 540,000 tests, plus a lot of support infrastructure over a six-month period. So that was for $26 million. So if you think about how far $95 million could go, and the CDC said this could be used not only during this academic year, but it could be used for summer activities, and it could even be used into the next academic year. So it seemed like a strange decision. I mean, I've asked the State Department of Public Health and Department of Education for comments on this, and I was told, well, we didn't have any school districts who have requested funds for testing, and we have plenty of funds if they do request funds for testing. But I guess my question would be, well, how, if they didn't know that this funding was available, I mean, of course, they're not going to request a bunch of funding for surveillance testing if they don't know that there's a pot of money that Iowa could access. I don't know of any Iowa school district that is doing routine surveillance testing. It's happening in some other states, and it's happened on some college campuses. And that's how they get ahead of some of the outbreaks, because they can identify the cases in young people who are asymptomatic.
Wonder if it's a fair question to ask, if President Trump were still President Trump and had offered the state $95 million for the same thing, would the state have turned it back?
Well, that is hard to imagine the state turning back any money from the Trump administration. I mean, certainly it didn't happen. And it sounded, the way the governor talked about it, I mean, it really did sound like a political statement, because she said, you know, our kids have been back in school since August. We've been running our school safely and responsibly. And so they just offered us $95 million for testing in schools. And I said, you can take your $95 million back because our kids are in school safely. So it really seemed like a statement that where it was almost like if we accepted the money, that would be revealing some sort of weakness. But we know right now that the B.1.1.7 variant, this is the variant that was first identified in the United Kingdom, we know it's been found in all 99 counties. It does seem to spread more easily among children. And seems to be causing certainly a lot of problems in Michigan. And so you would think that now would be a perfect time to set up a surveillance testing program in Iowa school districts, just to make sure that we get ahead of any outbreaks, especially since we know that a lot of young people either have mild symptoms or no symptoms when they're infected, but that doesn't mean they can't spread the virus.
Right. It is 18 minutes after the hour. This is KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week. I'm Dennis Hart, and she is Laura Bellin. And I'm very glad she's Laura Bellin, because she knows everything that's going on at the state capitol, never sleeping, always working all night to get these stories out on Bleeding Heartland. And Laura's smiling right now because she knows it's true. Laura, last week, one of the things you reported was that state officials, this is a big story, had deployed strike teams involving the National Guard, the Iowa National Guard, to more businesses to help with coronavirus testing than had been previously acknowledged. This is a big deal on your blog site. So why don't you unpack this?
Well, last April, the governor announced a program that called Strike Teams that involved state public health personnel and the Iowa National Guard. And the idea was to go out to large workplaces and nursing homes to test nursing home workers and to test the workforce, particularly at some of the large meatpacking plants, which were like the epicenter of the epidemic, where the largest outbreaks in the country were happening. And so we knew that there had been strike teams deployed to the Tyson plants in Perry and in Waterloo, and we knew about a few other places that it had this testing. But I have been asking, actually, since last summer, I've been trying to get a list of all the places where the strike teams were sent. And I filed a public records request in December on it, because I was investigating the deployment of a strike team to a Waverly machine parts manufacturer that has a links to Bruce Rastetter, who's one of the governor's major donors. And I had, through a records request up there, I had found emails that said that this company, even though they only had one positive case in their workforce, they were able to get somebody contacted the governor's office, and the governor approved a strike team for them. So anyway, I have been asking for a complete list of all the places that the strike teams were sent. And in January, the State Department of Public Health had sent me a list. There were a total of 9 businesses and 6 counties where nursing home workers were sent. And I mean, I asked many, many times, so you're sure this is the complete list, right? This is the entirety of where the strike teams were sent. And I was told that that was the complete information. Well, it didn't take long after that for the Associated Press reporter, Ryan Foley, to determine that Iowa Select Farms, which is a huge hog producer, and the owners of that company are the largest donors to Governor Reynolds' campaign, that they had had a strike team, or they had had state assistance with testing everybody who worked in their administrative headquarters last July. That was later than any of the strike teams that I had learned about. So since that story appeared in January, I have been trying to get from the state the full accounting of where strike teams were sent. And many, many follow-up emails later, about 12 weeks later, finally last week, the state coughed up a list, and it wasn't 9 companies. It was actually 17 different workplaces, including this Iowa Select Farms in July, which wasn't previously disclosed, and also several strike team events last April that hadn't been previously disclosed. And one of those was to another company owned by a major donor to the governor's campaign. This is Lynch Livestock that's up in Howard County, up in the Northeast. So in any case, there was a lot to unpack in these records because dozens of companies requested assistance, and some of them just had COVID-19 testing kits sent to them, and some of them had a link to a Test Iowa site near them. But as I said, these 17 companies got the full concierge treatment of the National Guard being sent out to facilitate testing. And this, I think that there's still probably more that we'll learn about this because the state auditor's office is investigating this program.
So let's be clear about this. Of those 17 companies, how many were linked to Governor Reynolds' campaign contributions?
Well, it's hard to say because they wouldn't tell me anything about the criteria used. Prestige Pork, which is a huge pork processing plant in Wright County, the town is called Eagle Grove. They had a strike team sent to them in April, and this was something that was newly disclosed. And they're the family that owns Prestige Pork. They are large donors to the governor. But I would hesitate to say that that was connected to donations because really the whole purpose of the strike team program was to go out and test workplaces where we thought there was a likelihood of virus spread, and the meatpacking plants were some of the highest risk places. So, I mean, I think it was very reasonable to send a strike team to Prestige. I would really question more this company, GMT, the one in Waverly that's linked to Bruce Rastetter, because that's not a food processor. It's not nearly as large as many of the others. They only had one case. They didn't have an outbreak. And there were companies, for instance, TPI Composites in Newton, they manufacture those big wind turbines. They have more than 1,000 employees. And they had a pretty big outbreak last April, and at least one of their employees died in early May of last year. And they had requested help, and the state sent a lot of testing kits to them, and then they had to arrange for their local Mercy One nurses to administer the tests. But, I really have to wonder, why was the National Guard not sent to a workplace like that where we already knew there was an active outbreak? So I think that there are still questions that need to be answered. And certainly the most questionable one was the very last strike team that went to the administrative headquarters of this Iowa Select Farms, because that wasn't a crowded factory floor. As I said, it wasn't a building where any pork was actually being processed. It was later in the summer when testing was much more widely available, both through Test Iowa and also at other. By that time in the Des Moines area, there were private clinics that were offering antigen tests for COVID-19. So really, I would have to question why the National Guard was deployed to help with testing in that kind of a workplace. And it's hard to imagine that a company that wasn't owned by major donors to the governor's campaign would have had that same kind of treatment.
More to come on this one, no question.
I think so.
State Senate was busy last week passing a bill letting groups form charter schools without getting a local school board's approval. This is a big change from the way charter schools have been formed in Iowa in the past. There are only a couple in there right now, but what does this mean? How is this going to work now?
Well, I mean, I think we'll have to see when the final version gets to the governor's desk. But this is something that the governor really wants to sign. She'd like to get more public money going to non-public schools. And the Democrats had, I think, at least a dozen amendments to that bill trying to get trying to make sure that these charter schools would be more regulated, trying to make sure that all the teachers were licensed, that the staff would be mandatory reporters, that they would have to comply with anti-discrimination laws and so on. All of those were rejected on party line votes. So we'll have to see what happens. I think that it could lead to a big loss of revenue for some of the school districts in the larger counties in Iowa, because it's easy to see that groups of people might jump at the chance to take a bunch of state money and start their own charter school.
We have about 4 minutes left, so let's just keep zooming along on Zoom here. Word last week, the state's going to pay $400,000 to design and build a wrought iron security fence around Terrace Hill, where the governor lives. What's the story behind this one?
Well, it's interesting because when they announced that, they made it sound like it was related to threats against the governor. There was someone arrested in March for leaving a threatening voicemail against the governor in January, which, of course, is reprehensible, and I don't endorse at all. But actually, I knew through my own investigation and records request that this permanent fence around Terrace Hill was approved last August, and they were already discussing with the State Department of Cultural Affairs, which oversees changes to historic landmarks like the Terrace Hill, which is on the National Historic Register. They were already talking about possible specifications for a fence and what kind of review would be necessary last August. So one of the key questions I had was this decision related to any of the Black Lives Matter protests? Because several of them last summer involved racial justice activists marching from downtown Des Moines to the governor's residents. And in particular, they were advocating for the governor to sign an executive order on restoring voting rights to people with felony convictions. So the short version is that the Iowa Department of Public Safety does not acknowledge that there was any relationship between the summer protests and this decision. They say that this is something that's been considered for years and that most states do have permanent fencing around the governor's residence, which is true. And they also reference the kidnapping plot against the governor of Michigan, which was foiled last October. But again, the decision to install permanent fencing around Terrace Hill happened last August. So I can't say for sure that that was related to last summer's protests. Something changed last summer to make this idea that had been discussed in theory something that they were committed to pushing ahead with. And as for the budget, I had received a document and a record that talked about the fence costing about $228,000. And I asked about the $400,000 price tag, and they said that that was related to more things, including the material cost, that the $228,000 cost estimate was just related to some of the design and construction costs, but not necessarily the materials cost.
Okay, 90 seconds. The University of Iowa has hired Barbara Wilson as its new president to replace Bruce Harreld, who's retiring. Good hire, correct?
Everybody I know in the Iowa City area, all the University of Iowa alums I know are very happy with this hire. She's been the number two person in the University of Illinois system. Before that, she had senior roles at the University of Illinois' Urbana-Champaign campus. So she's very familiar with a Big Ten school, and she's got really great credentials. It couldn't be more different from the last president they hired, who had no academic administrative experience. And the faculty are excited. The student government is excited. The Daily Iowan, which is the award-winning newspaper of the University of Iowa students, they were excited. They had liked all four of the finalists, but really two of them they endorsed heartily. And one of the ones they endorsed was Barbara Wilson, the one the Board of Regents hired. So I think that it's really going to be a home run of a hire. And the last 6 years, there's been a bit of an adversarial relationship between the faculty and staff and the president's office at the University of Iowa. And I think that's going to be changing starting in this coming year.
25 seconds. What do we expect from the state legislature this week? They've got to wrap up a lot of things, except, of course, they don't really have to. But what do you expect?
I think that they'll do as much work as they can on the budget. I think we'll see some agreement on the policing bill. There are still some differences between the House and Senate version on that, but I think that's something they really will want to get to the governor's desk. And I would expect by the time we meet next Monday that there will be some kind of a policing bill passed.
And I hope to be on time next Monday. Microphone problem from across the country. What can you say? Laura, thank you so very much.
Thank you, Dennis. Always a pleasure.
Laura Bellin and I are going to be right back here in this time slot and on time next week with a look at what makes news with the governor and with the Iowa State Legislature and what it means for all of us. It's been our pleasure to have you with us. Until then, thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We know you're busy. Thank you. And we hope you have a great week.